Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast, brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is written by Robert Jordan.
Currently, there are 11 main books in the series and one prequel novel.
Final book, currently titled A Memory of Light.
And the Fourth Age podcast is dedicated to that series.
To contact us, please visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Fourth Age podcast. I am Andrew Gellos. A number of months ago, Carrie, Jason, Ben, and I promised you guys we'd get you an episode about men, and that is going to be our topic of the week. Joining me on the podcast this week is Virginia, as usual.
Hi.
And for the first time, Morgan. Morgan, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, or, you know, give us one of your favorite moments or books from the series.
Thanks for having me here, guys. I'd like to start off saying that I was pretty much raised on this series, as well as the Tolkien one, and I just think this one is a little more complex than Tolkien came up with. And I want to say my favorite book would happen to be The Shadow Rising. And my favorite scene from it is right when he traps Asmodian. And he starts freaking out and acting like a little whipped dog for going after something on the table.
I do remember that. The weird race towards all the Tarangrill and that little battle and severing the black cord again and connection
fighting
to the Dark One.
Fighting with the Chodin call.
So we want to welcome Morgan, thank you, and this will launch our discussion now of men.
Well, thank you guys for having me. It's great being here.
Maybe this should be the time that we should mention that this episode of the podcast, the Fourth Age Wheel of Time podcast, is going to contain plenty of spoilers. So beware.
Yes, if you haven't read through the series in its entirety, you may get some foregleanings, visions of what is yet to come in your reading.
Yes, and that sort of leads right into our topic today, which is men of the famous viewings of the pattern. And what do you think about men, Andrew?
See, it's an interesting thing. Men is one of the few characters in the book who has, or the series rather, who has supernatural abilities that don't seem to help her at all. As profound as her ability to have her viewings is, she is constantly kind of in need of being under the protection of someone else, be it Rand, be it the Aes Sedai. And I think it speaks a lot about her character because, you know, with the exception of the viewings, which actually seem to annoy her more than they seem to help her, you know, she seems to be the kind of token everyone else figure in the series. At least that's kind of initially how I read her. And I don't know. I might be off on that and I might not. But that's my first thoughts on her.
I would have to agree with that. She is probably one of the most normal people surrounding Rand, and that certainly is one of the functions that she serves, is, I think, keeping him sort of grounded in reality. And it actually kind of surprised me when Cadswain was supposed to teach him how to laugh and cry, because really, Min seems to be teaching him more about that than anybody, just being herself.
Yeah. I also like to add, for me, Min always seemed like Robert Jordan's little theory driver with her putting out most of her visions. It's one of those things where you'd look at it and you'd be able to tell what might happen or what is going to possibly bite someone in the ass.
Well, and the funny part is that some of her visions, I really never understood the point of her visions, because they made a big point of, Robert Jordan, I should say, made a point several times of having her say that by having the vision, she couldn't necessarily change anything, and that sometimes by trying to change it, she made it happen. So, I mean, other than having foreknowledge of what's to come, I'm not sure how useful having that foreknowledge is if you really can't do anything to avoid it.
Yeah, it does seem a little more of a curse rather than a blessing in some ways. And, I mean, I know that she kind of stated that really early on. She was, you know, she would talk about how, you know, she saw that the two people were going to be married and she said it, and then her aunts had to punish her because people were trying to accuse her of being an Aes Sedai or a witch or something, and it was one of those things that she, you know, it was traumatic, you know, from the very beginning, and it kind of speaks volumes that she's been able to cope with, you know, looking at someone and knowing, well, that person's going to die in this way, and I have no idea how, and even if I knew when it was going to happen, I couldn't do anything to stop it. So there's a certain amount of tragedy to her that it's really interesting.
Well, she really seems to exist more as a benefit to we the readers in order to kind of give us glimpses of what's going to happen in the future, because obviously we're not interacting with them and we can't affect anything, but the characters can't really do anything about it either when they see the viewings. I mean, it's just been made plain that that's not something that, by her telling it, that it can be changed or avoided, or if you do this, then things will be better. It doesn't seem to make any difference as far as progressing their lives along, but it certainly helps the plot along.
Well, doesn't she help out with people, like, come to terms with what's happening? Like, Swan Sanche used her to figure out what's gonna happen with the tower, and now Rand is using her to figure out what he needs to do to get her, well, I guess, viewings to come true. So he's looking at him and pretty much taking him in like he did with all the Creathon Cycle books, and working with those from what he knows is going to happen, and just trying to make sure her viewings come true in the best possible way.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely agree with that. Obviously, the visions are very positive things as well as the negative aspects that they have displayed.
Well, I sort of like the idea that she serves the function of helping people to cope with the reality and come to grips with the things that'll happen. That actually seems more of a positive benefit to people than actually having the viewings, because to me, you know, say, putting it in the modern world, if I were to know that I was going to have a car accident and knowing that not getting in the car wouldn't make any difference, something would happen anyway, I'm not sure how useful I would find that, unless I could avert the tragedy or encourage the positive event to happen by doing something. I'm not sure I'd want to know.
Very true. One thing, and it's one of the more positive things that Min has seen, we haven't actually yet discussed any of the viewings really in depth, but was a minor one that she didn't have until she was getting drunk at one point in time. And that was the one where she accidentally slipped that Elaine was going to have twins, and that Avienda was going to have quadruplets. I always thought that was a really kind of significant thing. And she also gave us that kind of cryptic phrase, there will be something odd about it, about the quadruplets, but she never really was able to clarify, and we haven't heard anything else. So I'm kind of eagerly awaiting to see how that prophecy comes out.
Yeah, I think that was mentioned a few times, that something odd, in a previous podcast it was mentioned that something odd about the quadruplets. Not that I don't think that having four at once isn't a little odd to begin with, but I'm not really quite sure what could be more odd than most of the things that happen in this series anyway. Some of it's pretty strange when you really think about it. I mean, I love it, but it's very, very strange. I have a hard time imagining what Robert Jordan would come up with that would be odd in the sort of milieu that the series takes place in.
I'm not sure if this constitutes as odd, but kind of makes me wonder if, say, Min has two kids and ends up dying, like she has two kids the same time Avienda has two kids, and she dies or becomes somewhat incapacitated, so she's not able to raise and take care of the kids, and Avienda swoops in and takes them as her own, giving her four kids, but not necessarily all hers, making it kind of a odd situation.
I like that. I really do. That's online and a little more sensible than my previous crazy theory that I think I posted in the earlier podcast where we were talking about this. I kind of suggested that maybe Rand would have passed on as he is supposed to, and Avienda might have conceived her quadruplets in the world of dreams, and because what happens to you there happens to you in actuality. And I had that kind of slight thought that maybe that was the odd thing. But, I mean, something to the effect of carrying another person's children as well actually is a little more sensible, and at the same time, it would set up that each of Rand's wives, for lack of a better term, in that would each have technically two children by him, but not born by all three of them. It'd be odd, and at the same time, something that would kind of fit.
Well, I like that, but I have to disagree with it, because I'm just looking at the quote, and with Elaine, she said, she'll get with child from this, two of them, a boy and a girl, both healthy and strong. And then she says, Avienda would have Rand's babies too, four of them at once. Something was odd about that, though. The babies would be healthy, but still something odd. I think that's pretty clear that Avienda's going to have four of them at once. They have to be separate from Elaine's, because, I mean, they can't have them on the same day, because Elaine is already conceived, and Avienda, at this point in time, of Knife of Dreams, has not.
Make a good point there. I guess that's not really... My idea wasn't really odd, but more tragic.
Yeah, I do sort of like the idea that they'd be conceived in Tel Aranriad. We discussed that, Andrew, in the previous podcast. That makes a lot of sense to me, and that would certainly be odd, as far as that goes. But I almost wonder if it isn't going to be something more about the children themselves that would be odd. And I have to confess, I don't know what that might be. I think in one of the earlier podcasts on the Fourth Age, somebody, I think it was Carrie, thought that Elaine's kids might be two of the heroes of the Horn reincarnated, Kalyan and Shivan, the two hunters, the black mask and the red mask. But I don't know how that would, if anything like that could happen with Avienda's too. And it seems to me that if any of these babies, Elaine's or Avienda's or Min's, if she conceives, because she doesn't see viewings about herself, really, very often, I'm not sure what good any of this would do as far as the last battle is concerned, because they're going to be infants, unless that's the odd thing, is that they mature, like in some of the Star Trek shows, at like 10 times as fast as anywhere else. I guess that is a pretty crazy theory.
Maybe it's just... Yeah, that is pretty crazy. I was thinking, maybe he put that in there as just a little thing where it doesn't really matter to the whole plot line. It could be something after the book's finished where he might have wanted to follow up with it. But I was thinking that maybe one of the weird things that could be about Avienda's babies are they all come out to Viren to, keep twisting the pattern and just pass it along. Like, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Rand's father to Viren? Which circled the pattern around him so that they could set up events for Rand to be born.
You mean Janduin the Aiel? I don't remember anybody mentioning that he was Tavirin, but I might have missed it. Or you can't be talking about Tam, because he was just his basically foster father.
I was talking about Janduin.
Yeah. I don't remember. Andrew, was he... Did it mention that he was Tavirin? I don't recall anybody but the three boys and Archer Hawkwing being called. I think there was another... there was a woman that was supposed to be Tavirin as well back in the Age of Legends, but I can't recall the name of it.
I do remember vaguely somewhere that Janduin was mentioned as being either really lucky or one of those things that is typically associated with Tavirin. I don't remember offhand if it was ever said explicitly that he was, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was.
Yeah, now that you mention it, I do recall that the Wise One said that he was the sort of man that even though he was young to be a clan chief, men would just follow him, and he had wonderful success in reconciling some of the feuds between the clans and so forth and so on. It may be that the Wise One just don't think of it as Tavirin and in that sense, you might be right. It might have been the same things. Yeah, Morgan, I think you're right about that.
Woot.
I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention one of the most controversial, I think, viewings that Min had, which was in A Crown of Swords. And she says to Rand, I saw you and another man. I couldn't make out either face, but I knew one was you. You touched and seemed to merge into one another, and one of you dies and one doesn't. there have been a lot of theories about which one of those faces was who and who was merging with who. Rand thought it was very good news because he thought that he was merging with Luz Theron and that Luz Theron was dying and he wasn't. What do you guys think?
I don't know. I've never been able to make heads or tails on who it is. I'd like to think it'd be Luz Theron, but I'm still pushing for it's Moradin. Them touching is from the connection that they have, and it might have to do with him winning the last battle for the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I've kind of gone back and forth on myself on this one. Ideally, yeah, I'd like it to be Luz Theron, who is dying. I could also see that really weird thing where Rand seems to die and Luz Theron takes over, and maybe Rand's subconscious is just suppressed until after the last battle. I mean, it might be another one of those weird tying into, you know, to live you must die kind of concept things. I don't know. Who knows? We'll have to read and find out.
Oh, my favorite phrase. I originally thought that this was Luz Theron that she was talking about, but now that Knife of Dreams has come out and there's the constant, well, not constant, but there's several times mentioned that Rand sees the third face, which is evidently Moradin, and I believe that happened because they crossed their streams of Balefire when they were in Shadow Logoth, and the Wanderer, who we now believe is Moradin or Ishamael, helped rescue him from the pit that he had fallen into when he was trying to defeat Samael. But they've a couple of times mentioned that he sees the face and the man is surprised and recognizes that he's seeing them. And a couple of times it said that he felt like if he just moved a hair, he would be touching the man, and they were aware of each other. And he mentions, I think, to Loyal that, or somebody, he mentions to somebody that the other person was aware of him. And so maybe that's the one that's going to merge, and then Luz Theron could be the one that dies, and then Rand can end up surviving after part of him dies.
Maybe he'll merge with Moradin, gain some of his power, and maybe sway over Mogadine and Sindane.
Ooh, I like
and
that.
And be able to turn it back on the armies of the dark. No, armies of the night.
Yeah, and I think actually there's a possibility in that. I like the concept of using the connection with Moradin to twist Mogadian and Sindane, especially because we're all fairly confident by now that Sindane's Lanfear. And, you know, there was a, I don't remember, it might have been Andrew Miller in a previous podcast who thought that Lanfear might have another change and come back to the light at some point in time. I'm not sure about that, but if so, that could be the way it's done. You know, if Rand uses the connection he has with Moradin to use the Kurosurva to influence and possibly switch them back, you know, bring them back from the dark side of the Force to be taboo.
If he would merge with Moradin, then perhaps that's a way for him to tap into the true power in some way, which would, might give him a little bit of advantage in the last battle.
I never thought of that. Being able to, if he could actually tap into the true power, he'd be able to throw not only the one power, but also turn around the true power back onto the Great Lord.
Uh-oh. Morgan. Morgan's a dark friend. Uh-huh.
The Dark One has to give permission for someone to access the true source, I believe.
Yeah, but if he merges with Moradin, then he might gain that ability, whether the Dark One wants it or not.
Yeah, he might become part of Moradin, and Moradin is given permission to tap into it, so, you know.
And if he merges with Moradin, does that make him Nablus by default?
It could go with the Ishamael, before he became Moradin, always saying that the Champion of Light once turned into the Champion of Darkness. You know, maybe he can be both at the same time in this one.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, I can't imagine even merging with Moradin would make Rand into a dark friend, but I could certainly imagine Rand, personality-wise, overcoming Moradin. Obviously, he's got all this experience with all these different people in his head and bonds and links and everything else. He should be able to take care of a little merging.
I think if he merges with Moradin, not only will he get some of his powers, like possibly the true power and possibly Sindane Mogadine's ability with the Corsuvra, and Morden will get some of his powers, even though he doesn't have any extra, but get some of the bonds, like be able to feel the his three loves and feel, who was his other bond carrier?
Oh, Alana, yeah. Yeah, the one who bonded him against his will, right?
Yeah, his first Aes Sedai, I guess.
It's going to take him a whole other age just to get free of all these links and bonds and get them all straightened out. That poor guy, he's got, I don't know what going on. Too much.
That's why I kind of hope he does die at the last battle, just because he's got really screwed over. Not to mention, I had somebody bring up a good point that they believe that Matt Rand and Perrin are always spun out at the same time, and they'd always be like sitting in Teleron Riad just hanging out, and all of them would always have these really crappy lives, and they'd always be interlinked together to help the dragon out in the last battle.
That's interesting. Moraine said that she had never heard of three Teverin being linked together like that, but then that doesn't mean that she knows everything that's ever happened either, so that's an interesting theory. They certainly seem to be developing some form of communication with these swirling colors, allowing them to view each other in real time. I imagine that that's going to turn into an ability to contact each other in real time. I'm not quite sure how, but it sure seems like it's going that way.
The way this person told me, he didn't think that they were Teverin in each turn, that this is like one of the rare occasions where it pops up, it needs three, but usually the only one who is Teverin constantly is the dragon, and they're just a focal point to help them out, whether they're Teverin or not.
Yeah, we're sort of getting away from our topic of Min and her viewings here.
So here's a 10-cent question, and it's the 10-cent question we ask about every single character. Do you think that Min is going to survive the last battle? And if she does, what do you think's in the future for her afterwards?
I think she's going to survive, mainly because two things. One is her viewing of the three women standing over Rand's burial site, and two is I think she's like loyal, where she's not really a fighter, but she helps out in every other way, and she's very vulnerable, and I just don't see her dying or even really being in too much danger in the last battle. Like, she might actually be somewhere safe off.
Yeah, I think she'll survive the last battle also, partly because of the viewings and the dreams that Egwene has had, but also the thing that kind of bothers me is that I know that there is a certain amount of the Warder Bond in the special bond that Elaine created to allow Min, the non-channeler, and Avienda, and Elaine herself to bond Rand. And we know that if a Warder dies, the Aes Sedai can survive it, but if the Aes Sedai who holds the bond dies, then the Warder usually dies pretty quickly or tries to commit suicide by basically trying to avenge his Aes Sedai. So I would have to think that if Min were killed, it would be really detrimental to Rand, apart from his feelings for her. But I mean, physically, it seems like that would put him in more danger than almost anything else.
Well, I like that, and honestly, I'm with you guys, too. I firmly believe that Min's going to survive the last battle, if nothing else, because I want to see what happens when a channeler and somebody with Min's ability for viewing has children and what happens to those children. Even if it's one sentence in the epilogue, I would really like to see that happen. I might not get my wish, but hey, you never know.
Who knows, she may be one of the focal points of making foretelling Aes Sedai and, I guess, what's going to be now Aasherman.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought.
That's definitely a good point.
Yeah, well, so Min gets a 3-star survival rate. That's pretty good.
I know there are previous characters that we've had some dicey odds with them, and I think Min's a definite survivor, so I think that will wrap up this episode of The Fourth Age. I'd just like to say, if we didn't discuss any viewings that you have a particular penchant for, or if you have any sort of feedback at all, we love hearing from everyone who listens to the podcast. You can send us an email with theories or ideas or general criticism at podcast@dragonmount.com. You could also leave us a voicemail by calling the podcast's number at 1-888-333-7690. You can obviously listen to any of our podcasts on dragonmount.com. And I do not believe it's been updated lately, but we do still have the Fourth Age MySpace page at www.myspace.com/fourthage. I'd just like to take this opportunity once again to thank Morgan for being here with us today.
I'm very glad you guys have me, and I also have to say I have to admit I think I am a dark friend.
Uh-oh.
Excellent. It's about time we actually had one.
I'll come out right and say it. I'm a dark friend. There's too many of you people for the light on this podcast. You need the dark person here.
Okay. You're nominated then.
Goodbye from the dark side, and remember, when the great Lord remakes the world and his creation, I'll be looking down on all of you.
Okay, Morgan. Well, thanks for being here today, and Andrew. And this is Virginia to say goodbye from the light side and exhorting you to walk in the light.
And once again, this is Andrew Gallows. For everyone here at the Fourth Age, Saravya Ninto Manshima Taishite.
The Fourth Age podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@DragonMount.com. The Fourth Age music is brought to us by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com. Thank you.